week, what a day, what a year, everybody. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Rio here with my partner, the very busy Mr. Nick Hodge, who, of course, is also an investor, publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, co-owner of Resource Stock Digest with me, newsletter writer, thoughtful thinker, insightful, witty gentleman, amongst other adjectives. This is the 336th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, gold, silver, consolidation time, value, premium picks. Spoiler alert, not this week. You're going to have to sign up, everybody. A lot going on. First and foremost, Mr. Hodge, it's an exciting time in the world. Sir, the government shut down. I'm so thankful. How are you doing?
I'm having a great government shutdown. That's how I started my weekly letter this week. The first time since 2018, and we've talked often enough that you normally know I call BS on these government shutdowns, that they always a last minute deal or something like that. Sort of kept my mouth shut this time because it was, in fact, Trump was in charge last time this happened, and you could sort of see the writing on the wall. But nonetheless, I appreciate all the superlatives and the praise. Not sure they're all deserved, right back at you. And yeah, we're in a resource bull market and there's plenty going on, and it's no less bizarre than it was last week. So where do you want to go?
No, listen, first off, let me say go Cubs go. By the time some of y'all see this, we would have known the outcome, but I was fortunate enough to be in Chicago for game one of the series there on Tuesday. And so that was phenomenal. We won that game. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. We hadn't had playoff baseball at Wrigley Field with people because the last time was COVID since 2018. So 7 years, it was absolutely spectacular. So we got the jersey on, got the mug out as always. And we're looking forward to meeting the Brewers in the divisional series, but we have a very tough Padres team to get through. So I'm excited for that. That is coming up here in the next hour or so. Outside of that, look, let's get right into the markets. The overall indices, I think ironically, and it makes me smile, applauding the government shutdown. Rick Rule has a line that says, can they just go away forever? They would cause less harm than they otherwise would. And I tend to agree with them because, look, I mean, the bottom line is both parties have really been a detriment to everything from how the tribalistic nature of our society right now. They both feed into that. They both cater to that. They do that more than they actually administer policy that's helpful to all of America, regardless of whether you're in an inner city project or on a farm in Iowa somewhere, right? And so, no, go away for a while and let people start seeing and realizing that we can function just fine. And so, look, am I a proponent of eliminating all government? Of course not. But am I a proponent of getting rid of wasteful race baiting, class baiting, wealth inequality baiting government and the Fed? Absolutely. Let's go. Let's trim it down. Let's cut the fat. Let's get a leaner, healthier governmental body and, you know, politicians that can still walk and talk at the same time. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a small government guy. The founders of this country set it up with checks and balances so that really not as much could get done as the politicians wanted. We know that human nature is always to want more power, right? So once you get in office, you don't leave. And that's why you end up with 90-year-old senators insider trading their way to $20 million net worths, et cetera. I've got no time for either side, really. And so, as I said in the beginning, I've been having a wonderful government shutdown. I was tweeting earlier. I was tweeting earlier this week, if you're doing life right, you won't even notice that it's happening. And at the same time, it speaks to the utter dysfunction and partisanship that's going on in the country and that I don't see a near term end to. I feel like we didn't mention the fourth turning last week. I think it's heating, you know, back up where I don't want to say crescendoing, but you can see the tit for tat back and forth. And I see the rhetoric and the claws coming out even more than they were in terms of the clapping back when, you know, one side says one thing and then the other side is immediately there with evidence because of the social media and all the video that's out from the past, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, et cetera, whatever. So, my biggest concern was the slowing down of the issuing of permits for resource exploration. But even some of those are still coming through with the government shutdown. And the other thing I saw, which I also saw you added to the list, is government still writing checks into critical resource companies while the government is shut down, or at least the headlines are coming out. So not a lot to add to the government shutdown. You know me, it's, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the politics, but what else did I read this morning? Oh, every government shutdown has a 100% history of reopening. So don't worry too much.
Yeah. At the end of the day, folks, it's these are power, ego-driven, power-hungry lunatics that will be back, if anything, because they miss being in power and miss the ego being stroked and catered to. So let's get to the markets. The overall indices have cheered the government shutdown. The real, I think, point to be made is that the overall indices are cheering on stable rates. We haven't had that surge on that 10 and 30 year that we had, you know, some months ago that was really worrying the markets and that, frankly, I was worried about. Do I still worry about that in the midterm future? Absolutely. No doubt about it. I think the bond market eventually takes control of the overall indices again. I think gold is somewhat telegraphing that. We'll talk gold in a second. But in the midterm, in the near term, for now, rates are stable. The U.S. dollar index is stable between 97 and 98. The 10 and the 30 are stable, you know, off some 10-15% from the worrisome levels that we were at some 3 months ago. And so thoughts on the volatility index, rates, the dollar, and how they're correlating with the overall indices? Seems like they're all holding hands at this point to me.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of said it there, stable, but stable lower is what I would add. You know, the dollar is stabilizing, yes, but it's stabilizing down around 97, 98. It's not stabilizing at 100 or 102. Rates have gone down, stabilizing downward as well. And both gold and the S&P 500 hit all-time record highs this morning. You mentioned the VIX. I haven't quite looked at that, but I believe it's well below 17. I can't see because your face is actually right in my chart. Let me see.
Oh, yes.
16.65 on the VIX. And of course, with the S&P at all-time highs, that volatility is going to be subdued. What's interesting is all the negative Nancys out there, right? Like, you know, and I've been saying no recession, we're at all-time highs. Yes, there's inflation, but you know, you got growth. GDP is at 3%, will likely be at 3% again this quarter. And so I see the tweets about the job market, I see the tweets about the healthcare, I see the tweets about the government shutdown, and yet I stop and I look and I see all-time highs. And so sometimes, going back to Mr. James Dines, you don't have to think, you just have to look. And that's where we are. Look, we're back to, I hear people talking about GameStop and meme stocks again, and you know, people are buying quantum stocks and gaming stocks, etc. Like the NASDAQ, I mentioned the S&P. The NASDAQ also hit all-time highs this morning, right? Alongside gold. And so, you know, that mantra of everything is awesome, I think can continue. What's really unfortunate, and the thing that we say here the most, is those people who do depend on the government for whatever it is, healthcare, handouts, SNAP benefits, on down the line, right? There's clearly been, and this is no secret, so I'm not breaking news here, but a bifurcation of classes in America.
Absolutely.
Where that middle class is now getting stepped on in that, you know, that K-shaped recovery where the asset owners are going up, and the middle class, if they didn't figure it out, or they're getting the lower leg of the K. And so that's sad to see, and we'll continue to call that out. And at the same time, I'm not the asshole that was fucking in charge the entire time.
Yeah, that's a fact. And also we are the people amongst others, but you know, I mind my business, you mind yours, Nick, and our business has been letting people know to become asset owners one way or the other. And it doesn't matter. And we've said this a million times, right? We said this years ago. If you have $1,000, $5,000, $100,000, $1 million, or $10 million, whatever your level of being able to get in the game, just get in the game. It's absolutely imperative because you said it well earlier on a tweet or on a, what they call X post nowadays, but you said if you don't own assets, you might need a third job. And the tweet was in reference to more Americans needing a second job. And I thought it was perfectly, perfectly quoted. If you don't own assets, you may need a third job. Forget a second job. The people that need second jobs right now are the majority, especially young people, where, you know, the barriers to entry for owning real estate or owning a business are, you know, at all-time highs, right? Because of the disparity. So just get in the game, folks. And again, spoiler alert, I'll say that we typically have, and it will have a premium portion to this podcast at the end, but on my end of it, I'm not giving any stock picks away this week for the simple fact that there's so many companies that are up triple digits and quadruple digits in our portfolios that me personally, in those letters, I'm going to start taking at least partial profits on some of those positions because I absolutely feel that my responsibility to subscribers, if we're up 1,000% on multiple positions or close to it, is to take half off the table, ride the rest for free, and go find the next 1,000% stock, right? If I made you 1,000%, made myself 1,000%, we could take half the profits off the table, have the rest of the position there on the house, and let that go, because I do see higher highs coming for all of those positions. But again, my sandbox where I feel comfortable is finding a $5, $10, $20 million company that I think has the potential, with the discovery, with the right management, to become a $500 million, a $1 billion, a $2 billion company. And we've been fortunate enough to do that many times over the last several years without a bull market. And I don't think this bull market is going to impede us being able to do that again. So yeah, you'll see some profit taking. Nothing to be said of the companies or the management teams. Just simply, if those companies still offer a double or a triple, that's not good enough for me. I don't get into this game for doubles or triples. If a CEO or a CFO makes a presentation to Nick and I on a private placement and we're doing due diligence, and I ask them what the upside is, and they say, oh, you know, in the next 5 years, I think we can get a triple out of this. It was great chatting with you. I'm not your investor class. I'm not your speculative class. I'm not the kind of capital you want. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear, if we make a discovery, we're going to be able, you know, to re-rate tenfold in the next 6 to 12 months. That excites me. Does it happen every time? Absolutely not. Is it the exception? Typically, yeah. But I think Nick and I have done a good job of delivering triple digit gains on a very consistent basis in a tough market. We got some quadruple digit gains that we've both delivered in very tough markets. This isn't that tough a market to navigate in, but it is going to be a stock picker's market. So I am imploring all of you to subscribe to Nick or mine or both of our services if you can afford to, because you're going to be able to do really well in this market. And yes, the tide will lift all boats. We'll talk about money being misallocated again. I'm seeing this again. I saw this in 2010, 2011. But for now, what I'm asking you to do is go get some of the premium picks and go see where the value is in the portfolios, because the value isn't in the company that's up 1,000 or 1,200 or 1,300% in the last several years. It's finding the next one. And that's what we're going to try to do for you all here over the next several months. That's my rant.
Good. I'll see if I can't pick up the baton and run with it. You were talking about, I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning. You're talking about, you know, people not being able to break into the game, folks not being able to buy a house or et cetera, essentially get ahead because of the rising prices. I've been seeing studies and reports recently about, you know, first-time home buyers, many, if not a majority of those, are, you know, getting familial help from their families, yeah, to make the down payment, right? And greater than 50% of folks who have more than one adult child are saying that they're supporting in some monetary fashion, housing, sure, food, yep, healthcare, childcare, whatever it is, one of their adult children. It just shows you that people are trapped, right? That upward mobility, unless you're already in a family that can help you along, show you the way, yeah, help you start your first business, give you that seed capital, whatever it is, right? Then it's been increasingly hard, and you do have to own the assets because the inflation's not going away, and the 2% target is about to be entirely thrown out the window, right? I mean, you're going to get a new Fed person soon, if it's not before. I was just going to say, you know, the term for Jerome is up in May, and so if Trump can't get what he wants before then by firing and then going to the courts and seeing if he can get away with it, etc., then you are going to get one in May. And no matter how it plays out, if Trump gets to appoint someone in May or he gets to appoint someone in November, you're going to get the most dovish motherfucker in there that Trump can find, right? Because that's what he wants. And it's been no secret about that, right?
That Fed will come with a leash. Believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're going to continue to cut rates and make monetary policy easier, which is going to further exacerbate the K-shaped recovery and wealth inequality, because 2% is going to get blown through. Your next monthly print is going to be 2.9 or 3%. Yeah. And that's with oil still in $60 or $70, right? Yeah, gas prices are ticking up. I saw $5 diesel at the pump the other day, but imagine what diesel is going to be if oil goes to $70, $80, $90 a barrel. Just before we started recording, I got my invoice for our meat pickup. Once a year, we get a delivery from a rancher in Oregon of pork and beef. I've talked about it on this podcast before. This year we got a half a pig, excuse me, a whole pig and a half a cow. Nice. And I just looked at the invoice and it was over $5,000.
Holy smokes.
For a half a cow and a pork, including all the fees, right? The butcher fee, the kill fee, et cetera. But still, I mean, I'd have to go back and compare it to last year, but I know for a fact in my elephant mind that that's more than we paid last year, right? So anyway, the prices are going up and you do have to own the assets. You were talking about 300%. Sorry, I made notes on your rant. You know, this week we put out the quarterly update for our private placement service, Private Placement Intel. And after I ran through all the positions and I did some calculations, I hit you up and I'm saying, you know, the average open position is like 260 some percent. That's the average. That includes like two or three that were down, you know, 70, 80, 90%, because those happen sometimes in a portfolio of 40 speculations. The average is still 260%. And it's probably closer to 300 now because we did the preemptive tax loss selling to get rid of some of those losers, right? And so, 300 is sort of par for our private placement course. Like you say, that doesn't work out all the time, but you know, even in the other letters, Junior Resource Monthly, Junior Resource Speculator, I see you over there. Again, I won't mention the names, but you know, these things are starting to go up. And I wrote my weekly letter today because it's Thursday and I think we have 16 or 17 positions in there. And just in the last 5 days since I wrote the last letter, two have hit new all-time highs, right? Including some that we've talked about on this podcast and given away for free and in the premium portfolio picks. So, and then the last thing you said was it's time to start looking for new names. And we touched on this a little bit last week. We were talking about market caps and making sure you're looking at what you own and knowing what you own, and share price is only the time. You got to multiply it times the outstanding count to truly see the value or the market cap. Look, man, and I haven't really been around for a full bull cycle. You caught one in the, you know, the rare earths, 10, 11, 12. So you've seen some of it.
Yeah.
I haven't quite seen what happens, but
you're starting
lately,
to.
Right. So that's what I'm going to talk about now. Like I open up, I wake up in the morning and I rub the sleep out of my eye and I start scrolling my news and I'm like, who's raising $30 million? Who's raising $40 million? Like this company couldn't raise $2 million 6 months ago or whatever it is. And then even companies that just raised $30 million, you're raising another $10 million you're like at higher prices. And so I haven't even gotten to my point yet, which is this. There are folks in this business who understand the cyclicality and have been around for a while who have just been sitting on good stuff waiting for this moment to come out. So don't think that the couple of t-shirts that are hanging on the shelf are the only clothes you have to choose from, right? Behind the scenes, new t-shirts are being made. And you and I know this for a fact because we're sewing some of those t-shirts together.
That's a fact.
And, you know, I was telling you, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I've been involved in this private company, the silver company, for 10 years, and we need to list it now. Like that's going to happen. And who do you think they're talking to? They're talking to, you know, folks that have been in this game for a while that have, you know, cash rich shells up their sleeves, that have CPCs listed and ready to go, or that conversely have, you know, there's groups out there that have, and you know, some of these groups, right? Like, maybe I shouldn't, but they have four, five, six companies that are trading that have assets. And normally there's one that is the dog, right? That is like, it needs something. It needs to be merged with somebody else. It needs cash. It needs rollback or whatever. You're going to start to see that happen and it's going to become new, fresh deals. Now, what you got to look out for is that it's not moose pasture and it's not recycled project going into those deals. And that's where folks like you and I and our network come in, because it's easy to put lipstick on a pig, as it were, when it comes to these assets and change the name. But anyway, now I'm starting to rant. So new deals are coming. There'll be plenty of stuff to invest in. Bull market things are happening. Some guy hit me up on Twitter today saying he wants to hablar contigo or con Gerardo about some gold assets. And I was like, okay, man, I'm just getting hit up by Spaniards now for mining deals.
Let me read and listen. Shout out to at Pete underscore Panda. Great follow on X, Twitter. Really good. Stays on top of the resource space. And I enjoy following. And I don't do a lot of follow, but I follow his because it's great. So he posts this. He goes, just in the last 24 hours, Guanajuato Silver announces 30 million bought deal public offering. Omai Gold Mines announces 30 million bought deal private placement. SAGA Metals, non-brokered million. Astra Exploration, 5 million bought deal. Formation Metal, $6 million. Apollo Silver, $21 million. NGX increases private placement to $175 million. I could go on, folks. Next gen, $400 million. Skeena, $125 million. It's the last day.
I tweeted the other day, you get a life offering. You get a life offering. Everybody gets a life offering.
This is billions of dollars that has come into the space, folks, in 24 hours. I'm not reading you the last month or the last week or the last year or the year to date. It's the last 24 hours, the amount of checks that have been written. And so, no, look, that energy is coming to the space. I think it's going to be one for the books. I think it's going to last several years. As giddy as I am about gold and silver, and let's talk technical levels there here in a second, I am as giddy, if not more, because they haven't had that new record run yet for copper, uranium, and lithium, because there is still deep value in that sector. And we're going to be laser focused on that in the publications here over the next several months. And again, taking some profits, taking some money off the table on 1,000% wins, letting the rest ride, and then reallocating that capital to the companies that haven't caught a bid yet. That's how you make 10 times your money, 50 times your money, 100 times your money in this space in short amounts of time. The time it takes to make that kind of money is shortened in bull markets, right? So if you can do it in bear markets where it's tough and nobody's raising money, and even for quality deals, in this market, the cream's going to rise to the top for sure. Technical levels. Let me get your take. I always rant and start by telling you my thoughts, and they pretty much line up with yours. So $38.55 right now on the spot price for gold. They tried to push it down earlier. It was up some 20, 30 bucks. They tried to slam it. Came right back. Thoughts on where that's at right now?
3,900 is the ceiling for now. It needs to break through that to get to that $4,000 level that everybody wants. You can see it consolidate between the high 37s and that $3,900 price, and you would still be firmly in a bear market. It's time to start saying that trees don't grow to the sky. I mean, every day I was waking up, and we have a staff meeting every Tuesday, and I think for the past 3 weeks, I told them that gold was at a new record high at the beginning of each meeting for three weeks in a row. I don't think that happens indefinitely. So I think a pause is in order, especially considering that you've got a little bit of a government shutdown here now. It's starting to get on the radars of people. I've seen the ETF inflows ticking up. I don't do a lot of the feels, but it feels like it needs to consolidate these gains a little bit and get a little bit of strength for the next leg up. So expect it to knock on the door of 3,900, but also don't be surprised if it takes a pause here in the October or November timeframe. You can see that with silver. That happened during the day today. Got up above 48 and it turned itself around. You didn't tell me what silver was trading at right now, but I would assume it's got a 47
or an handle.
Yeah, exactly. So shied away from moving higher, though I did see, who's the guy that tweets all the stats? Charlie Bielo on X. I think he tweeted that silver did put in its all-time high monthly close at the end of September, higher than it did in 2011.
Yeah.
So records are being broken. So silver's bullish, could go all the way down to 45 and would still be bullish. Most exciting this week, well, maybe not most exciting because gold hit a record this morning, but copper's real close to $5,
yeah,
right?
Man.
And we mentioned Grasberg last week. That's 3.5% of global copper. It's also 1 to 1.5% of global gold, which
correct,
we didn't mention, that I read in an article this week. So you've got supply coming offline there. And the government, which we're going to talk about here in a second, I know, is still keen to support these critical minerals and metals, of which copper is one. So silver, gold, copper, all looking good. PGMs, I would call out, you know, palladium looking good. We have deals in that space as well. So the metals complex is looking really good. And that, of course, relates to many of the things that we just outlined, right? Lower rates, dovish incoming Fed person, likely all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to make one point because I touched on all that money that's been raised in the last 24 hours. I've seen what this looks like in that 2010, 2011 scram to put money into companies to make quick money, right? By these funds and institutional buyers. There was a lot of misallocation of capital back then that led to exploration budgets being decimated, boards being fired years later, because the boards that came in couldn't believe the capital that these assets attracted, right? They didn't merit it in a lot of cases. I'm starting to see some of that. Quality exploration is being rewarded in this cycle. Focus on quality exploration if that's the sandbox you play in. That is the sandbox I play in. You're going to have companies like Prospector Metals that couldn't catch a bid and had to roll back 3-for-1, I believe, twice, if I'm not mistaken, in this last bear cycle, all of a sudden hit a phenomenal drill hole and be up 300% in one day. That's quality exploration that took many, many years of work. The 4 mile deposit that Barrick has, right? It just, they're describing it as maybe the best discovery in the last century. It's got like a seven and a half million ounce gold resource with an exploration target. They think they can double that in the next several months. So $15 million gold ounce deposit in the middle of Nevada. You just don't see those every day with phenomenal grades, right? And so that took many hundred holes to be able to outline that type of resource because it required a new model. So look, quality exploration sometimes doesn't happen on the first hole or the 10th hole or the 20th hole. You want the best teams, the best technical teams that also have capital markets IQ. So just be cautious on that front. There's going to be a lot of wasteful money being thrown around. Don't think because your favorite company got a check written to it, that makes it a quality company. Ask those companies what they're using that budget for. Is it going in the ground? Is it going to add value? Because if it's just going to book nicer rooms in Vancouver, that doesn't do you or I, the shareholder, any favors. I want you to have a nice room in Vancouver. If your geologists are out there busting their behinds, the guys and gals, making sure that things are getting done and that you're adding value for us shareholders that wrote those checks so you can have a nice room. So that's my second rant of the day on value. It's going to be important. Oh.
I wasn't quite ready yet, but I guess I'll start talking. Let me get to it, Nick. Just a couple of things. You mentioned Prospector. I obviously saw those results yesterday. I was going to read them to you just so you had a sense of how good they were. That Prospector hole was 13.79 grams a ton gold and 1.84% copper over 44 meters. Inside that was 21.93 grams a ton of gold over 24 meters. I wanted to connect the dots. You mentioned that they rolled back twice, 3-for-1 and then 3-for-1. This company was not foreign to us. We know the team. We know the geologists. We've, in fact, been involved with this company. Sure. We helped finance it in an earlier iteration of what is now Private Placement Intel. And we no longer own the name because of those rollbacks and because that discovery is not easy. So the team was always good, but yeah. The team's been at this for, you know, four or five years now, right? And the first set of projects that they had that we financed didn't hit, right? And they brought in, the team brought in new asset. It ended up being a John Robbins deal, right? With the Discovery Group, and they brought in new assets, and that's what they ended up hitting on. So exploration is hard. Is the first thing there. You often don't hit it on the first strike, and sometimes you've just got to move on. So, you know, when I saw that the other day, I had a little bit of FOMO for a second, and then, you know, my senses took hold, and I said, that's obviously good for the entire sector, right? When a company can Absolutely. Put out news like that, and the stock goes up over, it was up like 200% in a day at one point. And then I read later in the day, I read later in the day, that they had a Zoom call, and the Zoom call was like at capacity. It was people were getting pop-ups. Brian London was tweeting that, or somebody else was tweeting that, that, you know, you couldn't even get into the Prospector call if that doesn't scream bull market. And then there was another one. I don't know if it was last week or earlier this week, because time's a foreign concept anymore, but Sterling Metals, ticker SAG, we've also were involved with in a previous iteration Absolutely. Of Private Placement Intel, and the same exact story. Didn't hit on the project we financed,
yep.
went out and got another asset and brought it in. So you can think about that multiple ways. I choose to think about it in the terms of Rick Rule, right? Like, is there a little bit of FOMO? Yeah, I guess for me, but did I sell for the right reasons? Did I miss that, I guess, for the right reasons? And the answer is yes, because Rick Rule would tell you if the thesis has changed and they took your money and they didn't do, or what happened wasn't what you expected in your initial thesis, often, nearly 100% of the time, you need to change, right? And so we did that with Prospector and Sterling, congratulations to both teams.
Absolutely. Carpenter, whole team over there. Kudos for staying at it, because it takes a lot in this business to miss a few times. Bring in the right assets and stay at it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Matt Wilson over at Sterling. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we aren't having our own success and we aren't finding discoveries, right? Like, we had a silver deal just a couple of weeks ago that put out bonanza grade results of silver in Mexico. So if you do things right, you're still going to get the wins. You're still going to make the discoveries if you're invested in the right teams. And you can't let that FOMO get to you, because, you know, I had a couple of questions come into customer service. Did you see Prospector? Did you see Sterling? And it's like, yeah, but did you see X or did you see Y?
The 1,000% win over here and the 1,000% win over there and the 2,000% win over
here. And also, well, maybe not the last point, but I like talking about this stuff because it's topical this week.
Yeah.
The other thing you'll hear Rick and other folks in the resource space say that have been serially successful over multiple cycles, including Jeff Phillips, who's been given a bunch of interviews recently, and I heard say this, is you don't want to own too many names, right? Because then, so here's what happens, right? There'll be some guy at a conference who's like, oh yeah, I was in on that Sterling. It went up 200%, but it's like one of 200 positions that is in the portfolio.
Yeah.
And so it didn't fucking matter that he was in it because it didn't move the overall portfolio, right? Yeah. You need to be able to do the research and have the chutzpah or the wherewithal to make conviction bets, right? And so anyway, I'm not making excuses. We weren't in Prospector and we weren't in Sterling, but again, we've been in some for the right reasons and we sold those for the right reasons as well. So just some inside baseball on there, and that we've seen a lot of these deals. We're connected to a lot of these teams as well. And if, what did I say in a meeting the other week, or maybe it was on the podcast, if you kiss all the girls, you're going to get a disease, right? I mean, you can't do it.
Make it count. Kudos to those teams. Congrats to those teams. Love seeing exploration success. Love seeing it get rewarded. And again, that's good for the sector. It's good for people that can find, you know, the next great discovery. And God, I hope both of those discoveries work, because the initial numbers are fantastic. We were touching on copper. Copper had itself a hell of a week. It's closer to five. Looks like it wants to break five. We talked about the shortages. What's it got to get over to really break out and start shooting towards six?
Just over five.
Easy.
I mean, it needs to close like above five. It's not really a round number, but it's like $5.03 or $5.04. Just above $5. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. Look, I have been very cheerful of the Trump administration offering capital and taking, I don't like it in some cases, but taking percentage stakes, equity stakes in critical metals companies here in the U.S. I now read an article that the U.S. is offering to buy stakes in Australian critical minerals companies. And I got to say, and we haven't touched on this, you and I, Nick, but I don't know how big of, I guess I need the details, and I don't have details because not many were released, but I am taking a pause there. And I think there's enough in the U.S. for the time being to where, should we be looking to completely just open the checkbook to other jurisdictions? And then shout out to my Australian friends. We have clients and friends in that part of the world that are doing phenomenal work, right? And so it's no shade to them. But again, I mean, if we're talking America first and that's the policy, then there's a lot of other companies in the U.S. in the copper space, in the critical metal space, that I believe merit a look before we start writing checks to different countries. Thoughts on that, Nick?
I haven't really parsed about it in my head. I think you're talking about the Nova deal, which was an Australian antimony company. And it is an ASX listed company. It was announced just yesterday, while the government was shut down, by the way, that they won a $43 million Pentagon award to build an antimony hub. And the headline on mining.com is that shares skyrocketed, which has been the theme for the past couple of weeks here. Look, we talked about MP Materials. We talked about Lithium Americas. We've talked about a couple of other ones. At the end of the day, I'm not hugely in favor of it as a concept in principle, but there's obviously a but there. I'm invested in the sector and I know that it's going to happen anyway. And so I'm sort of a guy that likes to play what he's dealt and not tell the market or the government what to do, right? because I don't want that control, authority, or responsibility. And so if it's going to happen anyway, I'd prefer that it happens to the sector that I'm invested in and that I know is vital for the future. In the case of this deal here, the one I mentioned, I don't know if that's what you were talking about or not.
Yeah.
It was an Australian company, but the asset is in the U.S.
That's the detail for Nova. Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. If it's going to extend to buying shares in projects that are in different countries, that's the part where I draw a pause and I say, well, I really would need the details on that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and we've been saying this for a while. I mean, let's just talk about what we've been talking about, right? Like, let's talk about uranium, right? I don't think you can spend enough money to produce enough uranium in the U.S. to meet our needs. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's possible, right? And yeah. So with that plain fact having been stated, you sort of have to invest in other countries. Now, we've been saying, and the way the, and we have some guidance on this, because I don't know if it was the bipartisan infrastructure bill or the, what's the dumb fucking Inflation Reduction Act? You know, one of those outlined that, you know, in order to get tax credits for the electric vehicles, that the battery minerals had to be mined, not just in the United States, but in NAFTA countries, right? North American free trade agreement countries, i.e. Canada and Mexico.
Yeah.
And so by logical extension, you can see it going to Australia and other friendly countries. And I'm just going to keep rambling for a second. I already said uranium you can't do in the United States. You know, unless you hurry up and start permitting and investing in things and erase the NIMBYism in the United States. Like, I don't think you're building a smelter outside of Phoenix anytime soon. Like, you know what I mean? So you're going to have to involve other countries and other companies. And then last part of my unthought out and rambling response is countries are going to start begging for it. Like, Australia was advertising. Like, I saw one headline that was like Australian Prime Minister, not like kowtowing to Trump, but basically like telling Mr. Trump, like, hey, we got a lot of minerals over here. You know what I mean? So, I can certainly see countries that need investment, that want investment from the U.S., that want more preferential tariff and tax treatment.
Sure.
We're going to make deals with the Trump administration. And I said last thing, but one more thing. At least these are more realistic than fucking Greenland and the Ukraine.
Or just giving Argentina money because the president was here when Trump was elected and kissed his hand. Which is exactly what happened. I mean, you saw that last week, right? The U.S. came in and said the Argentinian stock market was in a free fall. President comes out and says, we'll write the check. Go buy Argentinian stocks. We'll backstop it. We're not going to let the economy implode. No strings attached other than Javier was super nice to me when he came over and kissed my hand when I was elected. He said nice things to me. And so you're seeing with this administration how little it takes to get preferential treatment. It doesn't take much stroking of that ego for that to happen. And we've seen some examples of it. And that's where I guess I start to worry about, you know, itemizing and prioritizing U.S. and Canadian assets first and then maybe, you know, branching out. But I did not have an issue with the Nova situation for the simple fact that Estelle, that project is in Alaska, my old stomping grounds. I know that project. Greg Beischer, I believe, had that project in his portfolio once upon a time. Tells you what a small world it is, because years ago, Millrock, which was the company that owned that project, couldn't get a market cap above $12 million. Same project. And now that project, this is how much the environment's changed, is drawing a $44 million handout from the government. And that's just for a portion of it. And that's just for that project. So it's a different market, folks. You can't think of it how we thought about it 7 or 10 years ago, because it's a different market. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we do the premium portion of the podcast? Did you want to talk government taxes and revenue and how fucking unrealistic it all is? Because I think this is the time for it. We're talking about the misallocation of capital in the resource space. We're talking about government shutdowns. We're talking about government just deciding who the winners and losers are, which, let's be honest, it always has, right? It's not a new thing. It feels like the perfect segue into government taxes and how realistic things are.
Yeah, I won't give you a whole rant because I'll keep my blood pressure in check. But I will just tell you a couple of things, some of which you already know because I've been ranting about them, and this is going to be a microcosm, so you're going to have to apply it to your own locale and situation. I moved to Washington State 8 years ago because of the no income tax here, and they've since, in fact, passed a couple of taxes that most any rational person would say are income taxes, including a capital gains tax on long-term gains over a certain amount that yours truly has had to pay several times, but that the government in its mastery of semantics calls an excise tax instead of an income tax, what I would call, and I think I have called, fucking bullshit. And then recently, more locally in Washington, in Spokane, where I live, they've raised all sorts of taxes. They've raised the property tax. They've raised the sales tax. And there's other taxes that they've raised to close a budget deficit that we had here in the city. And I was scrolling trying to find the article, but I haven't found it yet. And here's what happened. So we got a new mayor. She came in, she raised the taxes. Again, I don't even need to talk about the parties. That's just the fact of the matter. And she raised taxes and she goes on the news last year and says, it's all good. I'm confident that these tax raises are going to, close the budget shortfalls, the deficits, and, on to Oz, right? Skipping down the golden road. But lo and behold, here we are, not even through the next year. And what do we have in Spokane? A budget shortfall. After having just raised the taxes, and the government and the mayor goes on the news and says, I'm confident that these taxes are going to rectify the situation. Contemporaneously, we have a rampant homeless and drug problem in Spokane that same mayor has been loath to acknowledge. When she first took office, it was perceived problems downtown. Mm. That's what she was quoted as saying. 2 years into her term, those problems are no longer perceived, even from where she sits. It's hard to ignore and even harder to say that they're perceived. She's gotten significant pushback. I won't get into the homeless laws. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about taxes now.
The homeless laws have been saying, 75 to 80% said they should go ahead and exactly. implement. They decided not to implement. I'll do it for you.
And she's been saying there's... Where do you want to put them? There's no room in the jail, right? Like she wants to put them in services and beds because she's like empathetic and she thinks that it's service forward, mm-hmm. which has been proven not to work mm-hmm. in Spokane and in other locations. So last night, as I'm dozing off, this is past now. We have another budget deficit that we got to deal with. Last night, I read that the mayor is now, gravitating toward needing another jail, right? Obviously, there's fucking 1,000 people living on the streets of downtown Spokane, thriller dancing, as I wrote this week, while they're making crimes, property crimes. And by the way, people say that politicians, this has been another thing I've heard recently, crime is down. It's because fucking people aren't reporting it because nothing happens to it. The crime isn't down. People just aren't calling it in anymore. Like me, when someone vandalizes my house, my property downtown. Anyway, so now
I do think, by the way, you described the dancing as fentanyl-inspired thriller dancing in the streets of Spokane, just to be clear, everybody. I could have that off Sorry. My word or two, but yeah.
Fentanyl-fueled. I did the alliteration.
That one right there.
yeah. So now we need another jail. And how do you think we're going to pay for another
fucking...
Which is
going to cost what, Nick? What's it going to cost?
Now we want to raise the sales tax again, and it's going to, they need to raise, well, I think I was almost asleep when I read it, $1.3 billion we need now. I'm speechless, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, how could you be anything but fucking flabbergasted?
Yeah.
When they stand up there and they say, this is the last time, we're fixing the budget, and this is all over, right? So take this to Seattle. Take it to Austin, but take it certainly to California.
Take it to the farms in rural America. You take it wherever you want to take it. Red, white, lower class, upper class. You take it wherever you want. Beverly Hills, it's all the same stuff.
And so they obviously, anyway, I don't even know where I'm going now, but they want to raise taxes after having just did it. And yeah, it's a circle jerk, man. It's the definition of insanity. And not once, and correct me if you've heard it, as a politician, well, they'll stand up there and say it, but it never happens. You know, I think we should cut spending in other areas to cover for this. And that's, I think, what me and many other people are fed up with, because when my credit card bill comes at the end of the day, I can't go to my family and raise taxes, right? I got to pay the fucking bill. I either got to cut spending or I got to generate more revenue, right? And generating more revenue is fine when you're an individual in a business, but it is not fine when you're a government. And that comes from the backs of the middle class that we already said is struggling to get ahead. Yep. And who's going to bear the brunt of that tax increase anyway? Because it's on the consumption side. It's a sales tax.
Yep.
I can go to fucking Oregon and buy my next washing machine if I want to, right? So, and that's the other thing I was writing about in that same article is the financial freedom that affluence allows, right? Like, you know, you can find ways to cut your taxes. I was even writing about abortion and how, like, some people got to go to other states for child care. It's nothing, right? You fly first class to another state for health care if you and I wanted to, right? But other folks can't do that. And that's the problem. And the snake is just firmly eating its tail now, right? Like, my kids asked me the other night, would you want to be president, daddy, while we were eating dinner? And I almost spit out my fucking dinner. I was like, no way I would want to be president. Why not, daddy? And subconsciously, I didn't even think about it. I said, because there's no way out. Yeah. That's what I said. I said, because there's no way out.
Yeah, wrong time in history for it. Wrong time in history. And by the way, folks, the reason that I was supportive of Doge in its original, what it was supposed to be, right? Cutting waste and finding fraud. That was the original mission. Did it do it? Absolutely not. Did the administration allow for it to happen? Absolutely not. Do I believe Elon and his team of kids got their knees clipped when they started finding stuff? Absolutely yes, because I don't think the donors were going to allow those departments to get cut. You've seen the deficit increase. The last person to do it, whether you love him or hate him or somewhere in between, or
Mr. Clinton.
And I was around for that. People hated the stuff. He was cutting welfare. He was doing stuff that the Republicans are talking about doing now. He was making people go to work. He was cutting
Medicare.
A lot
of Democrats were. Yeah.
Everybody was up in arms. And you know what you got? You got a damn balanced budget. You know what you also got? You got a booming economy. There's a blueprint for this stuff. There was less money in politics than there is now. And that's why now we get a Trump administration that's going to sell you drugs. I made a tweet earlier. Oh, this is just like the 80s. You could buy drugs from your government again, right? So you'll have RX pharmacies that are government inspired, which is just Obamacare under a different name. It's the same thing, everyone. The reason healthcare is so expensive is because of Obamacare and the model. The model is just, it's flawed. And so for us to now say that didn't work, so what we're going to do is going to do a different version of it with a different name. It's the stupidest circle jerk I've seen maybe in my 46 years. And it tells you it's both sides. And that's why Nick does not want to be president of the United States. Because you can only kick the ball down the hallway so much. It's so far before it bounces off. And you know what? I think you're about to get that here in the next.
I was just going to say perfect ending, because there's a reason central banks have been buying the shit out of gold for the past couple of years.
They know it. They can do numbers. They can't do much, but they can do numbers, folks. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 336th episode our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week. Have a great October, everybody. Let's go, Cubs. Let's get them.
See you guys. Have a good one.